Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
All right, Jamie, man, so good to have you on. I really appreciate you coming on. I know it's been a crazy, crazy year for you. A lot of fun, but it makes it busy. People don't understand the life of a college coach and how it's never really an off season.
No, there never is, but I appreciate you having me on, Don. And I think my story was the day after we won the national championship, the next day was straight to a middle school, you know, Christmas concert. So you're not just a coach, you're a parent and a person of the community. So it just does, that part never stops either.
Yeah, that's perfect. Again, your kids are how old?
They're 11 and 14, so fun age.
11 and 14, yeah, the great ages. Yeah, that's great. You said the oldest one's a daughter, so is she, I don't know, it's kind of changed with kids nowadays. I don't think kids are, when I was 14, I couldn't wait to start driving and get off on my own. Has your daughter started talking about that, or a little
no,
early for that?
She's our studious one. She's the student and the academic, and so we got to push that because someone's got to take care of us down the line, you know.
There you go. Are any of your kids into sports?
My daughter's a gymnast and my son plays everything he can play. So we'll see where it all goes. I'm a big. You guys got to have fun playing, right? It's no different in our team than when, you know, you're 10 years old. Like, you got to enjoy it. You got to try things. And, you know, life takes its course and it all figures itself out.
Yeah, we did that with our kids, too. I mean, we stuck them into everything. I mean, whatever. I think they tried virtually everything, you know,
yeah.
Before we... Each kind of found their own. One got into music and the other one was into dance. And then my oldest, Brad, of course, was the only one that stuck with soccer. But I never cared what they did as long as they stayed busy.
Exactly. No, exactly. I mean, that's the way it should be for kids, whether it's, you know, our college guys. We just want them to be productive and positive, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I well-rounded too. I think that contributes to not getting burnout.
Yep. Agreed. And I honestly think that's, I know we're going off on tangents. I'm really good at that, but I think that's one of the beauties of college athletics is these kids actually still, they become very responsible and amount of, you know, guys who end up coaching our players always say it, oh, they're great kids, they're responsible. And it's because they've had to balance a lot of things, you know, over the last 3-4 years when they've been at school. And they're really asked to be students. They're really asked to be part of the community, you know, and those things I think make people grow up and it makes them better people for sure. But I think it's pretty, the correlation between being a good person and ending up being a good player. The more successful pros you meet, the more often than not, they're pretty good people too.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. What kind of things do you guys do for community engagement?
Well, tomorrow there'll probably be 4 or 5 guys at Seattle Children's Hospital. That's a sort of a monthly activity. And then there's going to be, we work at a place called Friday Feast, and it's the longest serving soup kitchen in Seattle. So there'll probably be a group setting up and a group helping there. So that's tomorrow, whether it's camps,
wow,
clinics, whether it's, I think, man, we're involved. And if you come here, we always say it's not supposed to be the easiest thing coming here, but it's supposed to hopefully be the most fulfilling. And we try to, you know, we're in it for these guys for 4 years. And, you know, we're trying to, you know, at first they might be a little hesitant and nervous in these situations and they really grow up.
I love it. No, I think it's so important. And we were always that way when I coached with our kids. I wanted them to be involved with the community, but I do think it's important. It's so great to be able to talk to you, though. I don't know if you know it, but your dad was episode 1 on Inside College Soccer. Was your dad?
Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, you're trending down if you're heading towards me, but yet you started with a bang, right?
Yeah, well, it's so great because you are very much, you've got a lot of your dad in you, though, just the way you interact with people in general. There are coaches out there who think I'm a big time D1 coach and I'm big time, and they kind of big time it. And we all know those kinds of, I think they exist in probably every profession. I think it's just some people are just that way. But your dad was is such a down to earth guy. I don't know if you know it, but your dad recruited my son. My son was at Team Bath playing for Tilly and Tisdale there, and your dad knew them, and my son wrote your dad, and your dad said, "Yeah, you can have a spot on the team, but I have no goalkeeper money available." And I said, "Well, how much is it, Bobby?" And he told me, and I said, "Guess what? You're not going to Notre Dame." That's exciting. But he called BJ Craig, who had just taken over at San Francisco, who was looking for a keeper, and set that up. And that was really, honestly, I had probably been coaching for 15 years at the time, and I had never really thought about it, about coaches helping other coaches. While Notre Dame and St. Francis aren't exactly rivals, they're still D1 teams, and and a lot of coaches are only concerned about themselves. And that was my first real introduction to your dad. And I thought, man, what a mensch. What a mensch. What a guy. For to go out of your way to help somebody just because. And he's a heck of a guy.
Well, we're certainly, I was very fortunate, right? I couldn't have had a better mentor, couldn't have had a better father. But I did learn a lot from him, and part of it is, part of it is he was, a lot of coaches are failed players, to be honest. I'm one of them, but he had done so much in the game. He wasn't trying to prove anything to anyone at this point. He was just trying to let the game do good for others and be part of it. And so while I haven't achieved half of what he did as a player, I certainly learned from that. And I certainly learned that we hold a very fortunate position. And man, we got to do good with it. And for example, with your son, right? When he was coming through, and perhaps it's like you have to, there's all these kids, and we say it to all the boys in Washington, we're not going to recruit all of you, but we will always help. That's our due. We are Washington employees. Everyone in the state is kind of our constituents. So if you
Wow.
want, we'll help. And we help guys all the time. And we'd love to be able to recruit them all. We can't, but it's certainly we certainly can give advice and kind of open a few doors along the way.
Yeah, no. So speaking of recruiting, I mean, so you it's so amazing, and I'm 'cause I spend way too much time on social media just because it's part of the job. Trying to get an understanding of what's going on constantly with coaches all around the country and with players all around the country, and promoting our business and all of those things. But a couple of years ago, when Marshall won the Natty, and then when Syracuse won it, I mean, the talk amongst American men parents, it was, it's ruining the game. There's no chance for the American player anymore. It's all about the international player. There's no chances for the American player. It's ruining the opportunity. And then, dang, I was rooting for you guys so hard. If no other reason, I just wanted to not hear that this year, and you guys have, quite the roster. So, I mean, how do you think, I know it's different for everybody because everybody's in a different location of the country. And, there are certain states where it's virtually, there is not much of a soccer culture. I understand that. And in certain states, it's going to be more difficult to win with local talent than others. But what's your t tell us a little bit about your recruiting philosophy.
Yeah, I'll start by saying I'm not one who ever I'm not here to throw stones. I think every school's
Right.
got they got to figure out what works for them, and I do believe sometimes the scale is tilted into immediate fixes and, quick answers. But for us, we're in a nice state. We have a good amount of soccer players. We have a great amount of clubs that are producing these players and working hard with these kids. We want to work with them, but we get to know, I honestly say we recruit families as much as we recruit players. We have a lot of kids with great families. They've instilled great values in our kids. Honestly, we get them, class checking, like that's not something we do. Like these kids want to go to school. I'm not convincing players to come to university. We want kids who want to come, whose families value education, and clearly are going to be talented players. So you kind of combine all these things, and we sift through and through camps, clinics, through watching local games. We really try to get to know all the local players as well as we can, and through that, can we find 4 to 6 guys in the state of Washington every year that are really talented? And then can we add to that 1 or 2 out of state guys that we've seen along the way? And usually they even have a connection. One way or another, the soccer's a small world, whether it's a coach who's really close who recommends them, or someone's got family in Seattle. But we don't get into recruiting wars with the ACC. I'm not into it. I'm not interested. I want kids who want to be here, who love the state, who, have bled purple and gold growing up. And then a lot of those kids we're going to develop along the way. I think 5 of our 11 starters, so half our team, were guys who redshirted, right? And so they were not ready. They're not stars. They're guys who have the right growth mindset to come in, put in some work, get better, and become great. And let's be honest, a lot of them do become great. But it's not, that's how we're going to do it. We're never going to turn our back on a transfer. But usually our transfers are guys who left and want to come home and realize that, maybe the grass wasn't greener. And so usually those are the guys we have. And then they are quite happy and proud to get home too. So, right, that's our model. It's not a perfect model, but it's a really fun model. I say when you recruit local players, there's a greater responsibility. Because they stay local, their families are local, they're going to talk, they're part of the community, right? If we recruit a kid from Dallas and he goes home, everyone's forgotten about him. But when we recruit a kid from Seattle, they're part of the community, and how we treat them and how we develop them, those stories are going to stay in the community for years to come. So we take a great pride in and responsibility in that.
I love that. I love that. And I did know that, I mean, I've followed you guys for a number of years, and we talk about players that need to develop and move along. One of the stories that you've had over the last few years that I thought was maybe the most un one of the most unusual stories in college soccer, and one that I still use in my recruiting talks with parents, because I'm trying to tell kids you have to go into college soccer, and especially if you're going to play at the Division One level, but even at the Division Two level, you have to go in with the patience and understand that you have learning to do and you have growing to do. Very few 18-year-olds anywhere in the world in any system are going to make an immediate impact. Very few. It takes time to learn to play with men. But one of the kids' guys is Ryan Saylor, the Ryan Saylor story.
Yeah.
Tell us about Ryan, because I think going into his senior year, he had played very few minutes and
Yeah.
then ends up on the Herman Mack watch list and ends up getting drafted and is still playing professionally today. But tell us about Ryan and his development. I think it's a
Yeah,
good
but
story for parents.
I think Ryan's a great he's a great person, and he stuck with it because it wasn't an easy journey. He was a Real Colorado player. Good player, big center back, but young. So we knew it was going to take certainly a year just to grow into his body, but we liked a lot about him. As a young guy coming in, if anything, he was too nice, right? And so he was a center back who was actually just the best person, and sometimes maybe lacked a streak of meanness early on, but was willing to work, and maybe that worked in his favor that he wasn't in a rush. And he developed, and there was a time in his career that he was behind two really good center backs. Both were first round draft picks. But instead of getting frustrated or, antsy, he just stayed the course and kept working. And we were honest with him. We said, "You're ready, but there's not a position, right?" And so it's just one of those, it took time and he stuck with it. And the craziest part is by the time he was done, I mean, he is arguably our best center back that we've ever had here. And sometimes as a coach, I look back and I say, well, should he have been playing earlier? I don't know. But I can tell you, and this is what we try to establish in these guys, that journey and that even the toughness to basically be a backup and to work and to have grit to do that every day, man, that's hard. Like to be put into the lineup, people think that's hard because you've got to play. I think it's twice as hard to be ready and not playing. And so we have those discussions, and it doesn't make it any easier on those guys, but we do tell guys a lot of times they have to be ready for a year before they get their chance. And that's when we know we're a good team. If we're not sure a guy's ready and we're putting him in, then anyone, who knows what's happening. But usually if we tell guys, you got to be ready for a year, and sometimes you get playing that year, but then the year when you get your chance, you're flying. So yeah, his senior year, his red shirt year, and then all of a sudden he's at Inter Miami and he's playing with Messi and he's playing with all these guys. What an incredible story. Now he's back. He actually got picked up by Seattle. So I couldn't be happier. He's going to be back, and he's in preseason in Europe right now. But he'll be back, and hopefully he'll be a mentor to the next group of central defenders. And more importantly than the next group of central defenders, he is a voice to the development plan for the next group of guys who might be struggling and fighting along the way to make it, but just not to give up and to keep working.
That is the story for sure. And that's the one that I try to preach to parents and to players, because now nowadays it's with a lot of kids, it's a matter of I'll be patient. I'll be patient. I know I need to earn my spot. And then by the end of the freshman year, when they haven't earned their spot, I want to transfer. You know, it become a culture of instant gratification for a lot of players. And I try to tell people, and I that's why I use Ryan's story quite often. You know, here the guy's got what, 30 minutes or so going into his senior year, and then bam, it happens, and it feels like he understood the long term, right? He was looking long term, not short term gratification, but willing to stick with it for the long term.
And to give the players a little grace, I think a lot of coaches give up on guys too, and I think that's the truth,
True.
guys. They're not working out quickly. I'm not saying they tell them they have to leave, but they, you can approach a player after a freshman or sophomore year and really sell the vision that, we believed in you and we still believe in you, and that's the player we saw. Or you can say, hey, this isn't going to probably work, and I think when players hear this, the latter, they're more likely to, to move on. And, we, again, I say we've got a responsibility. We saw something in them in the first place, and we gotta own that, and we gotta try to harness it. And it doesn't always work. I'm not trying to say it's this great, but the guys I celebrate probably more than anyone, and if are the guys who actually made it through 4 5 years and played very little and still contributed. Like those, man, those are character guys. And those guys, man, that they have a huge impact in your team. So making sure the right people get celebrated and it's not just the guy scoring the goal, is pretty key.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I appreciate you sharing that story with me, and hopefully one day soon I'll be able to I'd love to talk to Ryan and hear
Sure.
his side of that story, and what it's like for a player going through it. Because I just think it's such an important one for parents and players nowadays to hear and to consider as they go into college soccer. Because I just feel like a lot of kids are jumping too quickly. And like you said, to be fair, I feel like a lot of coaches are giving up on kids too quickly sometimes too. So your career, obviously you talk about transfer, You were a transfer, right? You got in the days before when it was very hard to transfer, by the way, it's a little not as easy. But you went to North Carolina to start your career, right?
Yep, started in North Carolina. My dad was at that time was coaching the New Zealand national team, and I just spent a year in New Zealand with him and training and playing. And I had a great first year and played a chunk. And Elmar, who funnily enough, full circle, replaced me at Creighton. Like it's funny how this world works. Like my coach, who felt so old at the time, and I looked up to and treated me great and gave me that opportunity. Like I had nothing but positives, but my dad left New Zealand, went back to Stanford, and my dream had always been to play for my father. My brother played for my father at Dartmouth. I won't go into that, but I almost played for my dad at Dartmouth, but didn't get accepted. So that was kind of the impetus for him moving to New Zealand. And so, come full circle when I buckled down and probably became a little bit better student, I was ready to transfer and play for my dad. So that was. I'm never against transferring for the right reasons, and that felt
Right.
like a really good one.
That is a pretty good one. And of course, it can't hard to pass up on a Stanford education at the same time, right?
No, certainly. The craziest part is, as an East Coast kid at that time, I had no idea. I just, it's funny how the world has become smaller, I think. And I felt like Stanford and the West Coast just seemed so far away back then. And now I feel like with, all the different mediums to share information, like everyone knows everything. But I was pretty naive. So I never stepped foot on campus, didn't know much about it. Other than my brother actually had looked there. And that was all we really knew. It was the athletic director, just to give it too much of a start, but it was the athletic director of my dad's at Dartmouth that went to Stanford. So that was the connection.
Yeah, and if for no those that haven't been at Stanford, that part of the Bay Area is just so gorgeous, huh?
Yeah, don't like recruiting against them. No, I mean they do. I mean I kid, but it's true. I mean it's a fantastic place, fantastic school, fantastic program. So all positives, but yeah, it makes it hard to recruit against.
And so what did you oh, did you notice a difference in? We talk about this a lot with our players about styles of the East Coast versus West Coast. Did you really notice a difference in how the football was being employed between the East Coast and the West Coast?
I don't think it's too much as a player. I
Well, the
think
player, a
coach.
lot of times you're just focusing on how you're playing
Right.
too.
Yeah. So as a player, maybe as a coach now, I see a little differently. And I think interestingly enough, because we changed conferences, right? So in the Pac-12, we were always, even though our weather really isn't very bad compared to the rest of the country, compared to Southern California or Arizona or these southern schools, San Diego, coming to Washington was hard. It was going to be rainy, it might be gray, like those Washington boys are tough and they're big. So that was always our shtick. And whether it was true or not, that was our shtick, like, and that was like, hey, we're gonna hold on to that. And even though if it's raining half the time we trade in our indoor center, no one has to really know that. We just know that, like, this is Washington. Now moving to the Big Ten, we're playing against Wisconsin and Northwestern and Michigan State, and it's snowing there, right? So that sort of our who we were, our identity had to a little bit shift a little bit, because I think like probably the Midwest and the upper Midwest is probably kind of the toughest in many ways areas to play but I think we have a bit of a combination of like West Coast. Who gets an idea of like being able to play and having, a little bit of flair. But sometimes California and everything gets a little bit, gets a bad name for maybe being a little bit softer and not ready to mud it up. So hopefully we're the perfect combination of gritty and tough, but also guys who can play a little bit.
So when you were at Stanford and obviously towards the end of your career, I mean, the MLS was just getting rolling. In fact, so had that always been a plan in your own head? Did you think, I'm gonna play in the MLS.
I don't, again, I think, I guess, and I suppose, but I think I just played, and I think, like that's all I wanted to do is I wanted to play, and I didn't care where and what and as many hours as I could, wherever I could, just what I liked doing. It was, people say, oh, it can't be your identity. It kind of was my identity. I just played soccer and I loved it and it filled my cup and that was all that mattered to me. So, I don't know where I thought I was going to play. And I don't think there was any roadmap. I just thought I was, I think naively, I just thought I was going to keep playing forever. And, the path opened up at San Jose and I got to play for a little while, but, also a rude awakening because if you're a slow defender who doesn't defend very well, you're not probably going to have too long of a career, but it was fun while it lasted.
You know, it's really funny you would describe your mindset like that. One of my buddies is Bruce Murray, played for the national team and had a really nice career. And he said virtually the same thing. And he said, I don't know, at every level, I just wanted to keep on playing. As soon as one level was finishing, I just wanted to keep on playing. That's all I was thinking about was I just wanted to continue to play. And I think that's just it's such a healthy take. It drives me a little crazy sometimes when, I hear a parent say, my kid's 8 and he wants to play professional in Europe. And it's like, oh, good. I mean, it's good to have those thoughts and it's good to have heroes and it's good to have levels to look up to. But at some point, I think you need to play for just the joy and the love of the game too, not for the goal necessarily. Nice to have that thing out there, knowing maybe it's out there, but to be present with the game and to really enjoy the love of the game is, I think, what stops burnout from happening, from kicking in. Just to really, I just can't imagine being, and that's it. Look at me, I'm 63 years old, and I still can't picture this game not being part of my life in some way, and I've always felt that way. And my kid, well, my son coaches in college, it's the way he feels. And I think it's just there's no talk of retirement. There's no talk of burnout. There's no talk of being sick of it. It just still, and I think that the way you felt and the way Bruce has felt, and I've talked to a few other, I've had a few pros that I've been around in my time, guys that and guys that you played with, like Dyack and some other guys that I'm pretty close with. And everybody says the same thing. All the guys that kind of made it, at least into the pro world, all say the same thing. I don't know. I just wanted to play.
It's so simple and it's without a, I think sometimes people talk about actually being like almost having too much of a plan and being too forward thinking, like, where is this taking me? I'm going to play in college. I'm going to play with just, I'm going to play. Right. And I'm going to let like, if I play enough and I'm good enough, some doors will open. But I think there's almost too much of a process. And sometimes it's, the youth clubs and even like I feel like there's it's almost like scare tactics to some degree, right? You got to get into this team and you got to play this way and we'll get you moving forward. I mean, I'll tell you firsthand, like our best player, Christian Roldan's our best player ever to play at UW in terms of his success, and there he was playing for his local club, not any, no MLS club, no fancy UCNL club. I mean, Union Independiente, his little club, and thriving away and developing into actually a leader because it wasn't a club with all the bells and whistles. He probably had to do half the coaching himself as a young player and bring the
Right.
balls, right? So, and then, Kalani's our probably next best talent right now growing up, and Kalani's the same way. Small club, had an amazing coach and, Jennifer Thomas and these like they weren't too worried about anything. They just played. And it's even our guys. In our level and even into better high school levels, the agents now get in the way. And they're too busy telling them what's in front of them and worrying and making them move forward and making them think almost too far in advance. And man, if you're good enough, people will notice and you don't need to rush out the door. You don't need to rush be in a rush. You just need to play. So no, I fully agree. And In the end, that's half our program's motto is just the joy and happiness of playing. And I don't think many people come to our trainings, and maybe that's why the guys who don't play stick around, because our trainings are built to be fun. They're supposed to be a standard, but they're built to be fun. Like, if our practice isn't the best part of their day, maybe if they lost, it's not, but in that day, but other than that, it should be the best part of every day.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, even as a coach, but even as a player too, I think I like practices more than games, because it was just that camaraderie of that locker room and that being out on the field, and everything felt a little looser and freer, and it was more of the childhood growing up playing with your friends feeling. Even though you're serious, even though you're trying to get something done, there was more of that than game day was. Game day was war. It was time to go to war, but trainings were so much fun.
No, it's special.
So obviously you got into a little MLS career, and you tried to play overseas a little bit, and as you said, it just didn't it wasn't in the cards. So what did you always know you wanted to get into coaching?
No, it was an interesting pathway. I was, I had a bunch of sort of like hip groin, issues when I was playing, and I'd had some surgeries, and it wasn't the reason I stopped playing necessarily, but in one of my rehab assignments, I went down to New Mexico where my brother was doing his residency. He's a doctor, and he connected me with some good people, and as I was rehabbing, in this stint, I started just where's the best place to rehab and start training and do your runs? It's usually at the university. So so I started going down to University of New Mexico, and I just started popping around. And Klaus had been a friend. I actually looked at University of New Mexico as out of high school, and so I had connections. But anyway, I basically started training there and just being around the team a little bit and doing what I was allowed to do. And Klaus was actually in the midst of retiring, the Klaus Weber, the coach there, and Jeremy Fishbein came in. So I basically left New Mexico. I felt healthy, and I went and signed in Minnesota. And I probably lasted 4 months at Minnesota, but in the previous four, I'd really become close with Jeremy. And when Jeremy became the head coach, he said, "Hey, well, why don't you come back? Rehab again. If you're healthy, you can go try it again. If you enjoy this, maybe you coach." So I sort of fell into it, in all honesty. There wasn't a plan. There wasn't a thought. Everyone told me, "Oh, you're a coach," because, I mean, again, as a coach's kid in the field, usually are the organizer, and you talk a lot. So people always thought that way, but I didn't think of that myself. It was the next option in front of me, and I took it. And I had four amazing years, and I got a lot. Jeremy Fishbein was very good to me, gave me my opportunity. That's where I sort of learned about state schools, because I'd never worked at a state school or been to a state school. Like, I mean, I've been to UNC, but like that was it was like I it was a year, and that wasn't a full in-depth, learning lesson. It was, hey, we got really good with a lot of New Mexico players there, and we developed them up. And we, over 4 years, that team lost in the national final, with, again, five or six New Mexico boys starting. And so I loved that idea. I loved the pride and the identity they had. So that always stuck in the back of my mind. And I left because, again, I wanted to go coach with my father after that, and I went to Notre Dame and coached with him. I thought it was great because I got to make a little name for myself as an assistant before I joined my dad. But that was the journey, and I got to join and coach with him for 2 years, which is pretty special too.
No, that is special. And Fishbein, yeah, I mean, he's a legend. What he did there with that, I'll call it a small, but it is, it's a smaller state. It's not a, it's not California. It's not a public school like UCLA. It's what he did there, and the consistency that he developed there, was incredible. So sad when that program got shut down. So unjust and sad.
That was a sad day for a sport, for that state. Again, generally I'm a fan of most administrators, but I think a new one came in and didn't understand the landscape of that was a special program in that city and that state, and it did a lot for them, and probably did more in terms of PR than any other team in that school. But hey, maybe now that the Mountain West has men's soccer and it can be rebuilt. But maybe that's wishful thinking.
Yeah, your mouth to God's ears. Yeah, so you got to be with your dad, and at that time your dad was back at in South Bend, right?
Yes. So 2 years at Notre Dame, 2 great years, really fun amount of players that have now become coaches from those teams, like Nate Norman, Notre Dame women's coach now, or at that time, Greg Dalby, who's, the Air Force coach. He's just really good people, players, Justin Morrow, who went on and had US caps, and, Matt Beisler, just great people. And I almost feel bad sometimes pointing out those guys, because there was just as good of people who didn't go on to the same careers. But those are names that people around the game know. And so it was two really special years. But then the Harvard job came open, and that was a really intriguing job and a really exciting place to go.
Was that right after had Kerr just left?
John Kurt just left to go to Duke. Johnny had done an incredible job. He
He did.
built a really good team. I was very fortunate to inherit a group of really talented players. And like I, if anything, I had to course correct as opposed to coach. I always say, when you got a good team, that's, you just kind of steer them a little bit. And in that group, I mean, God, the first year, we had like Mike Fecito, who ended up being an MLS, Andre Akpan, an MLS. These are good players. But they, I think we lost in penalties in the Sweet 16 to Maryland, or lost on a penalty to Sweet 16 to Maryland, and we lost in the round of 32. So there were teams that were knocking on the door. But at that time, the Ivy League rules were a little different, and I felt like I was a little handcuffed in terms of how much I was able to be with them. And that frustrated me. I wanted to coach more. I love coaching. It didn't stop the relationships, but just being on the field was limited. So when the Creighton job came open, I went to Creighton, and that was following Bob Worming, and obviously another legend in the game. And that was my one blip in my career that was kind of it's kind of a tricky one. And even talking about it today was, it's, like, you shouldn't take a job for one season. You shouldn't do it, and I did do it. And I went there. I loved it. Best facility. I mean, again, amazing people. Truly, an athletic director, Bruce Rasmussen, who is one of the best people I've ever met in my life. And he's also the guy who probably, put me under when I told him I was leaving more than anyone. And I respected him for it, because it's hard to leave a place after 1 year. But what ended up happening is we had a great season, lost to SMU in the tournament. Really fun group, and that group was going places. That group ended up going to a college cup. It was like Ethan Finley was probably the star name, but they had a lot of good players. But my wife's from Portland, Oregon, and my wife spent time at University of Washington. Family wise, when you're looking to settle down and raise a family and do these things, like, it just made sense. We didn't have Midwest roots, and even though we actually enjoyed Omaha, you got to make these decisions sometimes for your family. And so, I actually called my father again, and I asked, "Hey, can I do this?" And the beauty was that, he's like, "Look, you can make this move once, but if you make it, you have to stay at the next place for a long time. And that will show that you're not a guy who just jumps around." And as luck would have it, or not luck, but as life's got a funny, sense of humor. Sure enough, I get here for 1 year. We have a really fun, good year, first season, and sure enough, what job opens up but the Stanford job? And they call, and I talk to them, and I said, I can't be of help, but I can tell you, I know one coach who's unbelievable, and I think making sure that they looked at Jeremy Gunn was probably the worst decision of my life, because he's haunted me ever since. But honestly, that was sort of, that's life, and it tests you and it questions you. And that was the one thing, that I was going to stay at Washington, and I was going to make this my place, and I was going to try to make my identity here. And 15 years later, here I am.
Brother, that says a lot about you. It really does. And I think your dad's advice was solid, really solid advice. It's you can't just keep jumping year after year after year after year after year. And if nothing else for your family, it's just too hard on a family to be making jumps like that all the time. Well, I really appreciate you coming on, man. I think this is going to help some kids and some parents. How's the recruiting class looking this for this next year?
As I say, we never win a recruiting ranking ever. The kids we look at, they're never gonna, I mean, they're good. They're good. And we got some guys that we really, really like, but they're rarely are the guys that are, the five-star guys, so to speak. But we believe they'll become five-star guys. And again, local clubs, Crossfire, Sounders, Eastside, Seattle United, those, like that's our starting ground. And then, we've dabbled into Northern California this year, and we got some really good kids there. And but again, we tell them all, like it's going to be a process, and when you're ready, we're ready. But be ready to work, and we'll see where it goes. But the good and bad of winning a national championship and getting a lot of exposure is, we did have five guys drafted. It does create holes in your program, holes sometimes sooner than you think they're going to be there. And that's opportunity. So it's an exciting opportunity for some of the younger guys right now to maybe step in and move forward.
What's the spring schedule looking like?
Again, we take our spring very seriously. We play a lot of games in terms of we play two games every game date. We have a roster that can accommodate it, so everyone gets 90 minutes. It's not fair if you don't, if you that's why our red shirts make it. Like our red shirts make it because we make sure they get 6 90-minute games in the spring, and we train, well each time. So once you get that, you start to have a picture of if a player's ready. But usually, we'll always play a couple of the MLS Next Pro teams. We'll always go on one trip. There's a funny NCAA rule before someone thinks I'm doing something illegal, but we don't have five teams within 400 miles of us. We have. So we're able to take a spring break trip, and we always fly somewhere warm and basically go for a week and get some good games. So we usually find a pro team that's got a bye week. So we haven't sorted that one out yet because we're still in conversations. But and then we'll always play, UP, and we'll play Seattle U, and we'll play Oregon State. So we got those guys wrapped in, and then on the second dates of those games, we'll usually play Western Washington, Seattle Pacific, really good D2 teams. And I think for the groups, depending on who plays those games, it's a real good barometer, in terms of, hey, we should, in theory, be better than those teams. And our second guys have to show that they're better than them. It doesn't always work out that way. Those are good teams. Those are older kids. But we are always trying to kind of basically give a roadmap to the guys so they can see where they are along the journey.
Now, when we talked to your dad about this, we talked about the full season that Sasha has put together, the road going forward. And your dad was actually against it. Your dad said, "I like the spring the way it is because there's no pressure on the younger, but I can use that time to develop the younger players. It's not like we have a pressure on us to win." But we can use that time to develop the better players. How do you feel about the, what do they call it, the 21st century model, the full season? How do you feel about that versus the current model?
Yeah, not to go political on it, but I feel like a lot of people were really saw like, oh, it's only good. It's the only way to go. It's positives. And things are nuanced. Everything's nuanced, and no one pathway is perfect or the right way. There are some real good positives about the present model. That is for sure. I think some coaches along the way to try to get things moved on have really painted it badly. And in turn, I think they paint themselves poorly because I tell you, I produce pros, and I produce pros with guys that other people aren't even recruiting. So If you spend your time and develop guys, and in the present model, we have time to do so, it can work. So let's not just throw it in a dumpster and say it's a bad model, because it has some positives. And as my dad used to always refer to, having games that were educational games, if you have to win every game, you play it a very different way. Like, you are
Sure.
risk averse when you have to win usually, and games are a little more direct at times. And so when you have games that are educational games, and even games, like, we can now play pro teams because they don't count. So, hey, where do you stand up against those pros? And, can you build through these situations? Anyway, you can try things. So there were some positives in that model. Is it limited in certain ways? Sure. It's a congested schedule. Which, if you pick up an injury or something happens, that's not great. The one nice thing with college kids is if you had a bad year, and I've been fortunate, we haven't had many bad years, but for a lot of the coaches who have bad years, if you start off 0-8 in the fall, or 2-10 or something, and you're got to continue that for the whole year, you're going to have some mutinies on your hands, and some athletic directors are going to be hearing some stuff, and teams aren't going to be happy. The beauty in this system was always that the slate got wiped clean. In January, those kids were preparing and building and learning and growing, ready for a fall again. So, like,
Right.
there's some beauty to it. But I think I'm now on board, because it seems like the old model, that when it was first presented, was just basically like, play the exact same amount of games, and there was no, like, the NCAA was very rigid in how it looked at things. I think with the NCAA opening up, there's going to be some flexibility to get more, a few more game dates and a few more friendly games along the way. So, like, you can find out if your red shirt guys in a couple friendly games in the spring leading up to it are ready to go. Or maybe if you don't make the tournament, you still get a game or two, so those guys get seen for the next year. I don't know. Again, there's just been more openings and flexibility shown now that it seems like it could be a good model. I do believe an NCAA final in April or May will be healthy. I'm hopeful the MLS will work with us. I do think the MLS Next Pro team's not necessarily desiring to be, I don't know, they pay a lot of money for those teams, and I don't think they really want to do that model. So if we can become a better development scheme for them, I think more of the top players may come our way. So there's definitely some positives. So now I'm in favor, but again, it's going to be about the players in the program no matter what. And you take care of your players, and you develop them, and you build good relationships. I think it's going to work out just fine no matter what the system.
Yeah, I mean, the latest round of buzz, since they had this committee that came together with a few college coaches and then some other people that aren't really soccer people, but they're business people, and United States Soccer, and they're talking about, trying to make changes to make it more of a competitive year-round model, and from what we hear, maybe even some teams are talking about trying to play in a pro league. Maybe it's USL or UPSL or something that's a pro league, and I'm not sure, but what have you heard about that? I don't know. And maybe you can't share everything and would rather not. It's okay. But
No,
what
I
have you
mean,
heard about that?
I'm not in the inner circles of it. I do think they put together a very good board, because if I, call a bunch of athletic directors, I'm soccer coach who they don't really want to deal with, right? But if you are the vice president of NBC, I'm just making something up here, and you call an athletic director, well, he that matters, because that relationship matters, and it doesn't matter necessarily for soccer, but it matters for, TV rights and other deals. So they did a really good job of putting some really powerful people who love soccer on that board, who will be listened to. So that was a really good starting spot. I think it made progress. I think there's been some grandiose plans and some hopeful plans. There was talk of a small group breaking away, just the power, two schools and a few others. Then they're talking about everyone. I think for expediency's sake, the small group was a great idea, because, like, we could get two conferences together and pilot something. But then other schools were wondering. I'm not sure. I think one of the positives is in this crazy Big Ten world where, we were in Maryland 3 times in 5 weeks this year,
Wow.
and that, that I think for our NCAA tournament run, even though we chose not to come home the very last time because we just stayed on the East Coast, I think we put in close to 20,000 miles in like a month, just like
Jeez.
so I think the idea of this full year model would maybe regionalize the game a little bit too, and we'd play more of a West Coast thing. So there's just a lot of good ideas. I don't know how it fully gets over the finish line. I give Carlos at UNC and Sasha put a really a lot of time into it and a lot of care.
He has.
And he's passionate about it. So I just, I never want them to absolutely destroy the model we're in because it's produced a lot of the best players this country's ever seen. But I appreciate them for wanting to move the game forward in which way they see fit. So let's hope there's some progress. And I think there will be, and I think it's not going to be for this fall, but I really do believe we'll see something for that. What is it, 27, 28 cycle?
Yeah, and then my personal concern is always because I was a state school guy. So I mean, my personal concern is, I mean, you hear, and this is no rumors. It's just the fact that a lot of state schools are struggling. We've heard for years about, like Akron possibly shutting down and getting folded into Wright State just because the school's struggling financially just to make ends meet. Out here in California, we've had, Sonoma State, even if they're not D1, but they lost sports, and San Francisco State lost men's soccer, and it's flowing through, and it'll hit the North Ridges of the world, and when states struggle or when economies struggle, and schools don't have the money to spend, I do worry. So what does that mean for the mid-majors of the world that aren't the power drivers? What does that mean for them and their schedules, and what does that do to the development of soccer if they don't have ability to play against the better teams? How does that affect their kids? And so I think a lot of unanswered questions that need to be answered before, at least before I'm happy with what, but nobody cares what I think anyway, so it doesn't matter.
But
Nobody's asking me.
I think you're onto all the right things though, and there has to be cost containment. I mean, things are getting out of hand, and I mean, and God, the coaches can't get out of their own way, really. I mean, like if Johnny does something, Billy wants to do something plus one, right? And that's just like the nature of so many of these staffs and programs. And again, I can't fault these people, but like, we're spending ourselves broke in a lot of ways, and forgetting like what our charter is. Our charter, we're educators, and we educate through sport, and we're part of these higher learning institutions. And even that's, again, it all comes back full circle for me. We develop guys over 4 years. I'm not bringing a transfer in for 1 year and bumping them out the next year and advice, continuing to do it like that. That's not my charter. That's not what I'm about. And I think some of this, the spending, the cost containment, hopefully this model, if it regionalizes the game, maybe makes it one game per week, maybe we can even publicize the games a little better and even do better attendance. I think our College Cup would do, even though the attendance for us was insane because of it being NC State, and that was a special, special atmosphere we played in.
Right.
But overall, I think we can grow it maybe this way and hopefully save some dollars along the way, because I think people sometimes forget that we're not made of money.
Now that's for sure. Well, thanks, brother. I really appreciate you coming on. I really do. And we'll be following you guys this next year and see if you can catch lightning in a bottle again, huh?
I'm enjoying this one, but I think the best thing any one of our players said, and I'll leave it this, was he asked about what this season meant and what it looks like going forward, and he just said, "Hey, after having played in that national final, I will do anything to play in another one." And I don't know whether we'll be fortunate enough to ever do it again or to make that
Sure.
run, but it's a drug in the best way possible. It's addictive. You play in big games, you want more big games, and they'll be driven to try to get there, and hopefully we have some good fortune again.
Yeah, well, we'll be looking forward to it and looking forward to watching you. Thanks, Jamie, for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Nice, Tom.